Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Tell me the fairy tale again.
I'm Gretel, and this is my brother Hansel.
Ouch!
Be wise to leave. There's something wrong here.
Such a sweet boy.
Eat.
There's hardly any meat on those bones.
Gretel and Hansel.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Swingin' Axe Williams.
Hey, at least that's cool this time.
We got a great show in store for you, as we're going to be talking about the upcoming, well, actually, the recently released Gretel and Hansel. So stick around as we delve into that wonderful piece.
New episodes drop every Wednesday morning, so check us out on your favorite streaming platform or over on filmlosophers.com. You can also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We're all over them places, but we're talking about a little bit of a creepy, eepy movie that came out at the beginning of this year, and that is Gretel and Hansel. It's really going against the grain when I say the name of this movie.
Really is, and then I feel like I'm being sexist or something. It's really a no-win situation. With
it really isn't. I've grown up reading it as Hansel and Gretel, yeah. And now I have to say it as Gretel and Hansel, and I'm like, I get it. Sophia Lillis, she's got top billing, but I mean, still, you know.
I guess we'll get into it.
We'll get into it. But before we jump into this review, Spencer, give us that official synopsis, goodness.
A long time ago, in a distant fairy tale countryside, a young girl leads her little brother into a dark wood in desperate search of food and work, only to stumble upon a nexus of terrifying evil.
Boo. Directed by Oz Perkins, the film stars Sophia Lillis, Charles Babalola, Jessica Dego, and Alice Cridge. It was interesting. I was going through the information today, and I didn't realize it until I was looking up the names of the actresses and everything. And, Spencer, do you not recognize Alice Cridge?
No.
I could have swore you were a Trekkie fan.
I don't know who Alice Cridge is.
Spencer.
She's gonna be something in like, oh, I didn't watch all of that all the way.
She was the Borg Queen in Star Trek First
Contact. Oh my gosh, now I'm looking at her photo. She totally is.
Yeah, she is. So
fun fact, there were actually multiple actresses to play the Borg Queen.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, seeing as you didn't know this earlier, I take your statement with a grain of salt. One of the unique things about the film is that it's actually shot in the 155:1 ratio, or as some come to know it as 14:9, which is rather interesting because normally the aspect ratio for most mediums in with video, it usually is for film, it's 21:9 or 16:9 or 4:3. We just got off of this big old back and forth between me and Spencer, how he was upset that we were saying 21:9 instead of 7:3.
I'm just saying, they taught us in school, you reduce fractions. Reduce your fractions, people.
Well, when we get paid the big bucks to do that, we will make a big stink about it, okay? Oddly enough, the 14:9 ratio aspect ratio has been used by most UK, Irish, French, Spanish, and Australian terrestrial analog networks. Actually, it was really made famous by BBC. BBC was actually really well known for using that aspect ratio. And it was actually used in the States on the Discovery Network's HD simulcast channels, with programming and advertising originally compiled in 4:3. So it's actually really interesting. But that kind of adds a little bit of the uniqueness to this movie. This movie is just one kind of unique ball of fur, like in every sense of the word. Because this movie does not conform to most horror movies that we've seen as of late. And that kind of interests me, because it's like, all right, well, what are we doing in horror now? This is interesting. Like, if we're doing something unique and we're actually building upon something, I'm all on board for it. But we have to hit the mark, too.
Yes.
So, a little bit of the numbers. The budget for this film was a small minor drop in the bucket of $5 million.
It's just kind of crazy that that's small these days.
Compared to most films out there.
Yeah, but that's still pretty good, though.
I mean, $5 million, and you got, what, two kids who are the lead stars and one actress of old. I don't really know what she's done as of late, but yeah, you know, she's not really, you know. So seeing as a $5 million budget, I'm pretty sure the majority of that went to, like, the actors in the film, as well as, like, minor set design. But in its box office opening weekend, it actually brought in $6.2 million. So it's already recouped its budget. And to be quite honest, I don't really remember seeing a lot of, like, publicity for this film out there. Like, I didn't see it in a bunch of commercials. I didn't see it, like, obviously they didn't do a big old Super Bowl push. They didn't get a commercial for it, so.
Oh, that's like $5 million right there. So why would you double your budget?
Very true. Actually got a great point. So, you know, I didn't see a lot of effort into a lot of the advertising as I would normally do. But as I've been stating prior to this in every episode, and if you've been listening for some time, you'll know that one of my biggest things that I always recognize when it comes to the beginning of the year is this is the season for throwaway movies.
It's a dumping ground.
It is exactly. We'll see you soon,
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, my gosh. Between January and March, those are usually the months where studios will throw out feelers for their movies. Like, they'll throw out these movies that they're like, well, maybe we'll give this a try, and then throw it out. And if it doesn't catch on, it doesn't catch on. And that's just the kind of theme that goes on during award season, not just Oscar season, because you got the BAFTAs, you got the People's Choice, you got the Academy Awards, you got the SAG. I mean, you got all these different awards that are going on at the same time. So it's pretty obvious to say that these first 3 months, there's not going to be a heavy push. Like, you're not going to see massive amounts of advertising for this movie if they're not really expecting it to see, you know, the light of day come campaign season, which is in the latter quarter of the year. So, but that does bring us to the conversation about the movie itself. And just so you're aware, this will have spoilers. I mean, honestly, most people know this story, about 90% of this story already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really breaking any new ground in trying to tell you that this thing, you know, reinvented the story, because it didn't really. It's just the delivery was very interesting and so forth. And we're going to get into a lot of that. But just so you're aware, this review is going to have spoilers.
Cool.
Thanks.
I mean,
Ben.
It's like a several hundred year old story.
It actually is. It really is. I mean, this story, if you want to really go all the way back to, like, during, like, the Grimm fairy tales and all that kind of stuff, like, hundreds and hundreds. But going into this film, expectations, let's talk about expectations. Here's the thing. I wasn't lying when I was saying that a lot of the times for movies during this first quarter, you don't really see a lot of big pushes for publicity.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority I knew about this movie, and I'm going to be dead honest, the majority that I knew about this movie was it was the Hansel and Gretel story and the old lady pulls hair out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally all I've seen out of the trailers.
Yeah.
So to be honest, I hadn't heard any of the dialogue. I knew that it was going to be kind of an interesting view of, like, a horror film. And I'll get into that a little bit later. And I knew it was going to be a very interesting take on it. But I didn't know any specifics at all.
Right.
So that's pretty much what I was going into the theater with. Now, Spencer, being this more recent fan of certain horror, of not certain horror, but like of
certain horror,
of certain genres of horror, certain like subgenres of horror. What were your expectations? Like, what were you expecting with what you've seen thus far coming into this film?
It was less an expectation and a more of why am I here in the first place? Because like it's Hansel and Gretel. Like, what are you gonna do that's different? Like, I mean, Witch Hunters came out a few years ago. I never saw that because that sounded insane.
I don't know if that's a horror movie, but okay.
But with this one, I'm like, okay, so you got two kids. They're in the woods with, like, everyone knows the story. So I don't see, like, just coming into it, I didn't see why I should even go there. It had nothing to do with the fact it was a horror movie. I was just like, I already know the story. What are you going to do? Like, there, I looked up how many times the story's been done, and like since the like what 2000, there's been like 6 or 7 Hansel and Gretel stories. So I'm like, what are you gonna do that's any different than what they did?
Really, that's how many so far since 2000?
Yeah, roughly, I believe.
Wow, we need to make some original stuff here.
Why could you when you can just reboot Hansel and Gretel again? Hansel and Gretel 2.
I keep thinking about that. You remember that cartoon Robots?
Robots? Oh, yeah, the movie?
The slogan that robot says, like, why be you when you can be new? Just, sorry. That's what that felt like. and that's one of those things with this movie is, like, honestly, I wasn't sure what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, plain and simple. I don't know if I was expecting good. I don't know if I was kind of hoping that it would have been good off of the recent success of like It Chapter 1 and Chapter 2.
Yeah.
And Sophia Lillis's success with those films. We're not going to look at her like, I guess she did like a Nancy Drew film.
She's Nancy Drew now?
I believe she is.
Oh, good.
I don't even know. It's like I'm trying not to be judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I also want to be able to, you know, expect good things. You know, I as weird as that sounds, like I'm kind of done with expecting bad movies when it comes to this first part of the year. Like, I want to see a good movie. Like, we got gold when it came to Deadpool, because when Deadpool came out, that was
February.
Yeah, it was in February of 2018. No, it was in May. Why was it in May?
Was it May?
No, that's Deadpool 2, sorry.
Oh. Yeah, I could have sworn it was around like Valentine's Day, and they used it as like part of their marketing.
That's right, 2016. February 12th of 2016.
Yeah.
And it's like we struck it with gold there, and it's like, so what's to say we can't find it again? And I'm not gonna lie when I say I don't like it when people kind of push aside the movies for the first quarter of the year. I really feel like there should be a little bit more of an effort, because it's like I want good movies all year round, not just like the latter three, four months of the year are blockbuster season during the summer and then Marvel time during May and June. Like, I'm ready for like movies just to be good all the time. And this was one of those instances where I'm just really hoping that it would have hit the mark and would have landed with something great. So diving in, once we left the theater, what were your first impressions leaving the theater, Spencer?
Okay, so I guess we should start with this.
Okay, yeah, hold on.
Okay.
This fool fell asleep 2/3 of the way into the movie. Now, I give him credit. He did see a good chunk of the film.
Yeah.
One of the unique things about this movie is that it is only, I was looking at the runtime, it is only an hour and 27 minutes long.
Yeah.
So it's not as long as I thought it was.
It's very, I don't want to say expedient, but it gets you out of there quick.
It does. It's very much a film that's about like, hey, this is the story. Boom. This is where we're getting into. And it takes you on this journey. But 2/3 of the way into the movie, Spencer fell asleep.
So tired.
But the funny thing about that is like I was following it from beginning to end. And I felt like there wasn't really any place where you could really get lost, but you're saying that you fell asleep for that little bit and...
Oh, yeah, I felt like it was like 10, 15 minutes. Feel like I just missed most of the movie. Like, I don't know how, because I saw so much of it.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like I part of me was like, should I just recuse myself from this review? Because, like, I feel like I've missed... Because it was, like, the end bit, so, like, that's when all, like, the stuff was happening.
Uh-huh.
So... When I came back into it, I was like, oh, what's up with her hands? Like, why is she eating that? What is she talking about? Like, I know it's on me for falling asleep, but, like, at the same time, a lot happened in those 15 minutes.
It's
true. It was jam-packed in at the end, it felt like. Because, like, for most of this movie, it was kind of... I felt like if this had happened at any other point in the movie, I would have been fine. But right there, it was a lot to miss.
It was a lot. And the unique thing is, like, I was literally watching Spence, and I saw the moment when he passed out because his head went to the side.
What
and I'm
happened
like,
during in the movie when that happened? What was going on?
I mean, there was a little bit of the stuff that was going on, but, like, I could have swore you saw a good chunk of it.
Hmm.
So it's funny because as we're going to talk about this, this is going to be kind of like a fill in the gaps for Spencer as well.
Yeah, it is. Oops.
One of the things that I really have to say is that walking out of the film, it felt extremely, and I know this is going to sound kind of like arbitrary, like, oh, duh, but like, it felt very unique. Like, it felt very interesting mm-hmm. in its ability to showcase a story that many of us have heard, but not many of us have really explored outside of what we've been told. Like, obviously, we've had those ridiculous ones with Jeremy Renner and what's-her-name and, like, all the ridiculous ones and the reboots of the same story and blah, blah, blah. We've seen those already. However, this was a very interesting and almost off-putting, but in a good way, version of this story.
Hmm.
Because it was one of those instances where this particular film really made it uncomfortable in terms of like what I had come to know of the story already. And it was like, oh, we're going there. Okay. And oh, okay. Like it took that necessary step beyond what we've learned as the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it created something that was really unique in my personal opinion. So... I'm looking at you, and you're like, yep, didn't get that. It's all good.
Because I'm, like, quickly reviewing what I have of the movie, and I'm like, well, most of this was kind of basic, except for, like, the parts where Gretel herself is... How do they refer to it? Like, second sight or whatever?
Second sight, yeah.
Like,
so essentially, the story is pretty much the same as what you're used to.
Mm-hmm.
The little girl and her brother... are sent away. So the father's not in the picture. Mm-hmm. Father's gone.
He's dead or something.
He's dead or gone or whatever. And so the mother sends Gretel to try to find work, but they're nothing but like pervy gentlemen out there. And so you have this situation where the mom ends up sending them out of the house.
Oh, let's stop there for a second. This one doesn't just send them out of the house. She brings an axe to the table and just slams it down and is like, get out or I'll chop you into bits. And I'm like, that's kind of excessive, lady. Just be like, I'm not taking care of you. Shoo, shoo.
Well, yeah, essentially that's what the mom did.
Yeah.
The mom chased off her kids with an axe and told them not to come back or she would chop them into bits.
Which is so weird because I was right, like... after she had already told them to dig them a grave for herself and them. It's like, what do you want, lady? Like,
yeah.
You want graves or do you want them to leave?
She wants her cake and buried with it too. So essentially, Gretel and Hansel, Gretel's much older in this film. There's in this telling of the story rather than what we're used to. They're not the same age. Gretel is much older. And her brother's younger, obviously, and she ends up, she's like another mother to him. She's always worried about him and takes care of him. So they go and end up, you know, trying to make their way through the forest. They meet a huntsman who takes them in for a brief day, but ends up having to send them on their way as well, with directions to a forester, someone who can show them how to live in the land or whatever. And they end up stuck at this cottage that's in the shape of a triangle. Now, uniquely enough, at the beginning of the movie, right before we get to the story of Hansel and Gretel, there's a... I believe it's Gretel that's telling Hansel a fairy tale or a bedtime story or a cautionary tale of whatever, of a girl who was given the power from a sorceress or a witch or something and caused a bunch of people harm because she could see their deaths and could also cause it too. And so they ended up taking her back to the darkness from whence she came. And because she didn't stay in the darkness, she would lure children into her, you know, darkness and people's kids. She would lure them into that, and she would take them and keep them forever. So that's, I guess that's a great way to like put somebody to sleep, you know, like, hey, go to sleep, or the little girl in the woods is going to, you know, it made me think of, you know, Hocus Pocus.
Oddly enough, I actually feel like that would have been a better movie to see.
No.
No, you could make that work.
I mean, they did. It's called The Witch.
Oh, is it?
I mean, if you've seen The Witch, it's exactly like that.
Oh, I have not.
See? Maybe The Witch was a prequel. but it explains that. And then there's a lot of imagery in this film. There's a lot of, like, symbolism and so forth throughout the entire film. They end up finding this old woman who lives in this house. She's got like this banquet sized table full of food, and they eat. Gretel's a little hesitant at first, but then she starts warming up to it. And then it kind of does a whole 180 on you, and you come to find out that Gretel actually wants to stay because she wants to learn. She comes to find out that the woman actually has these powers. She's some kind of witch. She uses it, you know, for her own doing and whatnot. And she ends up taking Gretel under her wing to teach her how to do the same, you know, dark art or whatever. And Gretel happily agrees. But then stuff ensues and she ends up losing her brother. And she knows that the witch took her brother to eat him. And it turns into this big old showdown at the end. And she ends up destroying the witch in her own like fire pit that she was going to use to cook her brother, which is technically in the most bare bones of it all is the story of Hansel and Gretel.
You just added a part where like Gretel has magic.
Well, yeah, Gretel has the witch recognizes that Gretel has what's called second sight, and she decides to show Gretel that she could learn that power too. And it's there's a very interesting, like, subtle female empowerment vibe from this film. Like, everything from the moment Gretel finds the witch to when they're sitting down and everything. And it's like the witch is very much like, you know, fight the power kind of thing. And, like, this is who we are, and we are women, and we are powerful, and we are, you know, people assume much, but they don't expect us to be as, you know, incredible as we are. And your sister's, you know, something else, and this, this, and that. It's a lot of like, we are not to be trifled with. And as much as like, I'm pretty sure she was alluding to like the mindset of like, because, you know, we have this power. I think also on another level, it kind of felt a lot like, because we are women, because we are female, you know, we are to be feared and revered at the same time. Kind of like it was very interesting. I don't know, it was a very interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's bad, it was very interesting. One of the things to note, like, obviously you have a great cast, you have the magnificent performances of Alice Krish that you forgot, but you had,
I didn't forget.
You forgot. But we had Sophia Lillis, like I said, coming off of the success of It. And the really unique thing, the really weird and unique thing about this particular film, I don't know why everybody had different accents. Like, at one point in time, the little boy had an English accent at the beginning of the film, and then that went away. Sophia Lillis has no accent whatsoever, and she's straight, like, American. Is she an American actress, or is she an English actress?
That'd be crazy if she was not an American actress and then switched into an American accent.
Okay, no, she's from Brooklyn. Never mind. She's from Crown Heights, Brooklyn.
No.
I had to make sure. It's like one of those things where it's like the little boy had an accent and then that disappeared. Sophia Lillis had no accent whatsoever. And the witch in the forest had an Irish accent. And I was lost because I wasn't sure where this was taking place. Like,
you know, England, Ireland, like, you know, like they started off in England, walked to Ireland.
But from where originally? America? Like, I don't get where. I don't get the dynamic of everybody's accent being all over the place. Like, I get it. We're the melting pot of the world. However, like, does this take place in the U.S.? I didn't know, like, Irish people immigrated to the U.S. until, like, the early 90s or the late 80s. Like, I don't know. I don't know these things. And it just didn't make sense to me because it was throwing me off in the beginning, but then when he started just speaking like in a regular voice, then it was a little bit more easier to, it was a little bit easier to just stomach and listen. But I mean, I really was kind of thrown every, I liked the witches. I liked the way the witch was presented, mm-hmm. as odd as that sounds. Alice Cridge, she really brought a very unique sense of, I don't know, it was like a really unique sense of what you would come to expect in a witch. It wasn't very much like the normal that you're used to, like pointy hat and whatever. I mean, even at one point in time, they kind of make fun of it. It's almost like a trip, which, by the way, this movie, this has probably been the first ever film where I have ever seen two children trip out on mushrooms. Literally.
That was an interesting choice.
I was a very interesting choice, which makes me wonder, like, did the rest of the movie actually happen? Or is that still part of, like, the mushroom trip that they were on?
Yeah, because during that trip, I totally thought that there's going to be a portion where Greta lost Hansel somewhere. Because he just wanders off.
Yeah, it's completely out of left field. Like,
so did those mushrooms lie to her when she asked them, "Are you okay to eat?" And they were like, "Yeah." Like, this is a conversation she had privately with the mushrooms, so we couldn't hear it.
Which she actually says that she can talk to the mushroom, and the mushroom will give her answers. Essentially, that's what she tells Hansel. And when she bends down to talk to the mushrooms, she goes, "Surprisingly, they say, 'Eat me.'" And I'm like,
that really should have been, yeah, we're safe to eat, but yada, yada, yada.
But you know what that reminded me of? That kind of had a lot of those strong vibes of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
When, you know.
See that?
Yeah, it was very interesting how it kind of touched on that a little bit. And mind you, Alice in Wonderland, it's another female empowerment type of story, you know, which I don't know if you know this, but I believe the writer Lewis Carroll was on acid or LSD or whatever when they wrote the book.
Yeah, so, yeah. If you've heard the story, that makes total sense.
Yeah, 100%. So it's just really interesting that was an actual scene in this film. But hey, you know, it is what it is. Aside from that, some of the other unique aspects, like, I really did like the set design. I really think,
yeah, that house looked cool.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Like, what was going on with the house, Spence?
Wait, what do you mean?
What did you see that was cool about the house?
No, just the, like, general architecture of the house. Like, because I was thinking while watching this movie, I was like, I wouldn't mind that house to live in.
Yeah,
because it looked like just cool, like just from like the windows and like all the triangle motifs throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of really well done.
Very true. It's definitely got a theme going on, because mm-hmm. even like one of the windows, like I said, this film is filled with symbolism and, you know, imagery.
Oh, when she stuck her eye in that window.
And she's there's this one scene, like everything's triangular, and there's a scene where she's trying to look into the window to see what's in there in the house, and she pokes her eye through a hole that's in the middle of a window, and when you see the eye on the other side, it literally looks like the all-seeing eye
mm-hmm.
From Most of Your Money and stuff like that.
Yep.
So it was very interesting seeing how that is... that was being portrayed. It's essentially called the Eye of Providence, but I don't know. That iconography usually is mostly found in Egyptian cultures, and oddly enough, it's got like some symbolism in Christianity. Don't ask me how, but it does. Okay. It has its origins in Christian iconography, showing an eye often surrounded by rays of light, or a glory usually enclosed by a triangle. It represents the eye of God watching over humanity,
right,
or the concept of divine providence, which, if you consider the way this film was directed, like in terms of the story narrative was directed, you know, the concept of divine providence, Gretel making it to this witch's house to learn how to become who she was supposed to become, may have been divine providence on that behalf.
Okay.
Maybe that was part of that, like, whole, you know, imagery and iconography of the film. But uniquely enough, the two most outstanding parts of the film that I really do have to say I enjoyed was the cinematography, the way it was shot, the visual, you know, visual aesthetic of it all, the way the house looked, the way the color palette was. I really did enjoy the fact that the film, although it was in that unique aspect ratio of 14:9, the film itself had a lot of like unique opportunities to fill that small frame with really great stuff, like just really beautiful scenes, and I thought it was really great. Mm. Bottom line,
there. Like, I agree with you for the most part. There was just one thing I had a problem with, and it's at the very beginning of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, Gretel and Hansel are walking somewhere,
uh-huh.
and they just turned off the stabilization on the camera. And, like, it's just so shaky. Like, I don't know why, but I was like, I'm getting slightly sick from this.
It's, oh my God, it's like the Blair Witch all over again.
But, yeah, that was the only thing I have to say negatively about cinematography. Otherwise, I thought it was actually really beautiful.
It really was. I honestly don't remember that part in the film, but
it was like the very first thing you see. And I was like, oh no, this is mostly walking. This movie, they have to stop.
Like, you guys stop moving for a second, I'm gonna get sick. But aside from the cinematography, I gotta be really honest, I actually really liked the soundtrack. Like, I loved the synthesizer buildup in some of those horror scenes. It didn't really, at first, it didn't feel like it fit the scene and the film and the type of era that the film came in. But then it started to really fill it out. And I was like, yeah, I'm digging this. Like, I loved the way that synth swell came up. And it was very much like it was like a classic horror film from the 70s, but done right.
Mm.
Like, it was really great, and I actually really liked that soundtrack. So I have to admit, I'm probably going to buy the soundtrack when I get a chance to.
I'm going to have to listen to this again. I remember a synthesizer being there. I remember thinking, why is there a synthesizer in this type of movie? But then I guess I fell asleep during the good part where it was really rocking. So I need to go back
you,
and listen.
You did, because it was like, like, oh my gosh, this movie really just built up into like this awesome synthesizer buildup of like that scene where, so essentially when Gretel comes into recognizing who she is and her power, she realizes she just doesn't want to leave at all. And Hansel's starting to get concerned, and he's like, I want to go. And she's like, you want to go? Then go. And she, like, walks him outside and, you know, leaves him there.
Yeah,
like a good sister. And
it's cold.
And yeah, like, she leaves him, and the synthesizer, like, just builds up like crazy. And it becomes, like, this really beautiful mess of electronica and fear, and it's just really something cool, you know. So but it is one of those unique things where I have to admit, this is a really new, rare form of horror that's really coming into itself, because I'm going to be brutally honest, I've never really seen horror movies like this that have been able to really make it work, really stick the landing. But within the last decade, and I can say decade because now it's 2020. Oh my gosh, Spence, it's 2020.
2020.
that really threw me for a second. For the last decade, we've seen some really unique horror films in a very unique horror style. And honestly, the only way that many people can be able to, like, describe it is niche horror. Like, you have great examples in like The Witch, in do you remember me mentioning that earlier, 2015's The Witch, great film, one of the first films by Anya Taylor-Joy. She's the girl from Split, the one that ends up surviving at the end of it.
Okay.
This was one of her first films. Great film, unique, super unique, and very, it much like this, it's a very much story filled slow burn to a grand crescendo ending. Other films like that, like like Midsommar is a more recent film that kind of has that slow burn and then kind of builds up at the very end with this, like, large crescendo. That one's very much the same. Hereditary is just really out there, but they all have this same motif, the same, it's almost like they all use the same filters, they all use the same, like, mindset in using the style of narrative to portray a horrific telling of a story.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that I really can remember that actually was really good was what's it called, I'm drawing a blank. It was the one about the abstinence one. I'm drawing a blank. I'm looking for it right now. But, oh, here we go. It Follows. It Follows was a outstanding horror film that never really, like, lent itself to being, you know, just like boom and bah and like all these noises and like the jump scares or anything. It was like a slow build up, and I say it's an abs because essentially it's kind of an abstinence film. It Follows is the story of this curse that gets transmitted when people have unprotected sex. So, and as corny as it sounds, it's actually a really great story. So it was awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah. But like that one, like 2014's The Babadook, that's another one that's really great. And more recently, I don't know if you've ever seen it, and I doubt you'll probably want to, but Nicolas Cage's 2018 horror film, Mandy.
Oh, we were supposed to watch that, but we never did.
We were supposed to watch it.
I wanted to see that
one. Now we're going to have to see it because, like, I saw it once, and I was late at night, so I don't remember the full amount of it, but I do remember being like, holy crud, like, I need to see this again. So this was one of those movies that, like, definitely fills in that particular area of, like, that unique niche horror. And it's very interesting because you look at all these movies and you look at what qualifies them to fit in this kind of genre? And what were some of the unique, Spence, what were some of the unique aspects of this movie?
Of this movie? Well, a lot of the things you already said. Like, you know, it wasn't just a whole bunch of jump scares. Like, they were trying to tell a story and, like, build up. They used, like, tension and not trying to outright scare you to, like, build something. Because the witch herself, like, you know, in the initial meeting, you're like, this is going to end poorly, mostly because you already know, like, the story of the movie. But she doesn't come off as, like, you know, insanely evil first time you see her, but she does come off as suspicious.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of that just building on top of each other.
I agree. And that suspense, it's not hinging its entire endeavor of being successful based on, like, how loud a sound can be or how...
I really hate that.
I really do, too. And I really hope that, like, one day, like, filmmakers outgrow that ridiculousness because it's dumb.
Yeah.
It's just completely dumb. Like, I get it.
You can scare anyone with a loud sound. It happens
can do that
every day.
They use jump scares like that in regular movies. Funny movies. Kids movies. Like, you don't even need it to be a horror movie for them to use that anymore. And it's like, can we just grow up? Can we just be big boys and big girls and use, like, proper filmmaking techniques? Like, what happened to, like, to the slow burn, you know, nightmare-fueled type of storytelling that we used to have, you know?
Well, now you just blame all the kids and their phones and their WhatsApp messages. And it's all about instant gratification. Nobody has time for slow burns.
Wow.
It's all about jump scares.
We sound so old right
now.
I know.
Really old.
But I have to admit, it's one of those things where I actually really, really like the direction horror is going right now. And one of the things we had talked about when we did our whole little deep delve into getting you to understand horror was... one of the things that separates more common films, horror films, than the older ones is its new kind of transition into being more intelligent horror films. We've talked about that and how, like, things like Get Out, things like, you know, like we're talking about with, oh my gosh, how can I forget it? It Follows. Things like It Follows, you know, films like The Babadook. Those are all super intelligent and really impactful horror films. Mm-hmm. And I say impactful not to sound like all, oh, he's like overusing that word or it doesn't fit. No. I mean impactful as in, like, this film really makes a mark in the horror genre. You take a look at, like, for instance, I believe it's 2014. 2014's The Babadook. That film... Yeah, I was right on the money. Yeah. 2014's The Babadook. Such a, like, out of left field film. Essentially, it's a movie about a single mom and her child, and there's this, like, this entity that's following her son, making him, like, have, like, these outlandish outbursts and these ridiculous things. Like, the Babadook is coming for her son, and she needs to protect him. And it's like this whole deep dive into, you know, dealing with grief and struggling with, you know, the sense of loss. And it ultimately ends up, and I'll spoil the ending for you because it's not so much the ending, but it's the journey for the film. But in the end of the film, the woman has the entity, like, chained up in her basement and she feeds it. And it's okay. Like, that's how the Babadook swings out. Like, that's how it goes. And I know it sounds like super left field, but, like, that completely works for the story.
Okay.
But because it's an intelligent progression of the story, and much like a lot of the more recent ones, this niche genre of horror has really taken a whole different approach to presenting great storytelling to people without, you know... without having to overutilize, like, the cheap tactics of, like, jump scares and, like, loud music and ridiculousness of like overuse. It just doesn't have to be so much. it can be minimal, like with what we've realized with Gretel and Hansel. $5 million. $5 million to make this movie. And it was just as good of a story as, honestly, any other horror movie that was out there that may have cost like 20 or 30 or 40 million or 50 million.
Yeah. Surprisingly.
You know, so I got to give it, you know, that hand. So, yeah. And that's kind of where we find ourselves with this particular film. I really feel like horror is moving, in my professional opinion.
Yes, get that fancy monocle on, sir.
In my professional opinion, I really feel like this is going to be the trend that we stay on, and not, we haven't peaked in it yet. Like, we haven't plateaued with this genre yet. I feel like there's still room to grow, and I feel like there's still plenty of, like, space to continue to rise for this genre to really see, like, the full fruits of the people that are benefiting from the space now. Because I think one of the great things that we're doing now is we're recognizing great storytellers in the most, like, random of places. Great case in point. I mean, your boy, you know, Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Coming out of, you know, a Comedy Central sketch TV show and breaking off of that and being like, I'm going to make a horror movie. And people were like, what? And, you know, him, like, throwing down probably one of the most influential horror films of the last two decades.
Yeah.
By far. But, like, who would have thunk it? You know, you got people like Robert Eggers. Robert Eggers is a man who just recently, he's the one who did, he directed The Witch, but he most recently did The Lighthouse. And The Lighthouse has been getting a lot of, like, great attention because of its ability to portray that unique sense of horror that slow builds and delivers on its efforts. So I really feel like with everybody coming in right now and everybody kind of throwing out their version of what they see it as, and then people taking that and building on top of that and building on top of that, I really feel like we're just barely breaking through the surface of what is to come with this unique genre of horror, with this unique subgenre of horror. So, but wrapping this whole thing up, I really feel like this is a movie where, honestly, I know you fell asleep.
Yeah.
But the parts in between in that last part, there wasn't really much that, like, if you know the story, everything else just should have been self-explanatory.
Yeah, it's just like little details, like what the whole Black Fingers thing was all about.
Never explained.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes me feel better. I missed the part where they didn't say anything about it.
So you missed the part where nothing happened about
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Is that what you've been worried about? Well, Dirty Fingers?
Well, that, and then, like, well, like, because I, again, asleep, like, when, like, Gretel just starts, like, making things levitate, I was like, oh, I've missed something. The staff, she...
Oh, no. So she ends up realizing that she has the ability to take dominion over things, and she, like, there's a
wait,
whole...
Wait, she realized it then?
No. She had been realizing it, but she hadn't used it to such an extent. Where, like, before, she went out there, and she literally made a tree bend to her.
Oh.
So that was actually a really cool scene. I actually want to know, like, how they did that, because that was actually a really cool-looking effect.
Okay.
But she made a tree bend to her, and she's, like, realizing, like, oh, my gosh, I got powers. So part of that is just her learning those abilities.
Okay. Yeah, the only other thing I missed besides that is the whole witch switching from, like, I'm going to eat you to I'm going to teach you stuff.
Because it really happened in an instant. Like,
yeah, see? Like, everything just happened or didn't happen so fast.
But, like, the transition from, like, Gretel being, like, I don't know what's going on, and I think we should be concerned, to, well, maybe I could learn a thing or two. And she begins to, like, realize that there's something more to the witch. And so it may have been the scene where she's, the witch shows her, like, kind of how, essentially commanding, learning how to command the mm-hmm. will of like the other things, like the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And she made it stand up on its own in front of the witch. And she's like, see, you have the power. You have second sight, blah, blah, blah. And did you see that part?
No.
Okay. So you missed that part. But I mean, essentially that whole mindset of like her becoming this female superpowered sorceress, like it kind of gets a little interesting where she's like, I'm gonna try to use this for good and I'm gonna blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I have to say I like the way it ended because it seemed very ambiguous.
Oh yeah, super.
Like I love
especially
that
since I didn't know what the fingers thing meant.
Well, that's the thing, nobody knows. But like she essentially she saves Hansel. They go their separate ways. She tells Hansel, go on to the Forester. I need to learn my own path. I'm gonna figure this out. Blah blah blah. And he goes, he leaves, and she's wandering through the forest, and she's like, there's this like over this voiceover while she's wandering of like, oh, you know, and now the kids the spirit of the kids that were locked, they can be free, blah blah blah. And maybe I can use this power for good and, you know, blah blah blah, and make my own way. And as she's saying that, she's looking down at her fingers in horror as they're slowly turning black, like the witch. And it's like, huh.
It seems like a bad sign.
It's like, it seems like the narrative was going in one direction, but her body and the actions were going in a different direction. I'm like, I really like that. Like, it lulls you into this false sense of security. Like, oh, well, Gretel's going to be like this, you know, fighter for good and this, you know, the savior of the oppressed and all this kind of stuff as a newfound sorceress for good. But what if it's like inevitable? Like, what if she cannot escape the hunger that witches have? So, it's interesting. And mind you,
I actually really did like that part.
It was very interesting. I really did like it. So, kind of throwing around the conclusion of this review, I really do feel like I said, this isn't the end of this style of horror, this subgenre of horror.
It better not be.
And I'm really anxious to see what things are on the horizon, not just for, you know, everybody in general, but like even for the director itself, Oz Perkins. Oz Perkins, he's not really known for much, but you got to give him credit where credit is due. So I really hope that we do see more efforts of, you know, new and great things coming out of this genre. So wrapping this up, let's go ahead and go across the table. I'll go first. I'll go ahead and say the film passes for me. It's definitely one of those types of movies where I would say this movie probably would not have been as fun to enjoy and watch if it didn't have like the soundtrack it had. And it didn't have the focus of, like, you know, the way it told its story the way it did. If it was just another Hansel and Gretel story, I think I would have been bored and I would have wanted to leave. Mm-hmm. So thankfully it wasn't. So it passes for me. And in terms of Monocles, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. It did well enough to where it kept my interest. There was a few things that did kind of fall short for me. But all in all, it was a decent good movie, decent good horror film. And I think I'm more applauding it for the efforts of what it could be rather than just what it is now. Like, what more things could come about because of this film.
Okay. All right.
What about you?
Yeah, this movie passes for me. I was totally just expecting what I knew. And even though I got that, I did get it in a really interesting package. So that was cool. I realized I fell asleep during this movie, and maybe that's making the best judge of it. But, like, just so much happened in that little bit. Like, for the movie, it was mostly going at a very, like, slow pace. But once you hit that, like, last bit, things start happening real fast.
Yeah.
Overall, yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5 as well. I was surprised that they had, like, put so much creativity into a story that most people already knew. But it kind of does give you a good reason to go see it.
It really does. Like, this isn't just your typical Hansel and Gretel story. This is very much a unique telling of it in the eyes of somebody who, in all honesty, looks like they love the genre. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they had fun with it. And they crept up slowly and gave us something that, God willing, will continue to creep up and give us more and more for the time to come. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. Remember, you can catch us on all our social media platforms at Facebook at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmphilosophy101. We are super excited as the holiday for all lovers and ex-lovers to come is just around the corner. And what better way to spend your Valentine's Day week than coming to Oblivion Comics and Coffee and showing us your knowledge of Netflix. That's right. We have another great, awesome trivia night coming up February 10th. Come on down. Let us know what you think in terms of your Netflix capabilities and your knowledge, because we want to know and we want to reward you for it. So bring a team. Check us out on our Facebook page where we have the event linked at the top, and you can find out all the information there and sign up. Spencer and I are both going to be there.
Yeah.
Spencer's going to be wearing a Cupid costume.
No. I don't know who you think you're talking to.
That was great. But, yeah, if you can, make your way out. We'd love to see you. All right? But, yeah, this was another great episode. And mind you, I really do hope that this is not the end of what we're seeing in horror, because I really do like the way it's going. I just... It's unfortunate that we still have to sift through a lot of the bad to get to the good, but let's hope more of the good become readily available than the bad, and yeah, we'll go from there, right?
I guess we will.
So, but like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode of The Film Philosophers. So, from all of us here at The Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.